Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show here. Final hour of our live super stream. It is Friday, so we are going to have a little fun to wrap the week. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. JC Sherbert, my co-host over there. And since it is Friday, we are joined by the late night Gamecock, Matt Anderson. Welcome in, Matt.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Always a good time on Fridays. I look forward to it. It's my favorite day of the week.
Nice. Awesome.
Everybody's favorite day of the week. McKellar Enterprises chat box is hopping. Deputy Smitty is in. Thanks to him. He had a great segment yesterday.
Yeah, man.
In with us. We appreciate him. He's heading to the 5-point social opening. I texted my wife. I was like, is there any way we can catch a late flight to get down for it? And I really want to go. The times like this, most of the time I kind of just ignore that I'm here.
The happenings that are
just kind of stay in my own bubble and ignore it. But like times like this, I'm like, God, this sucks. Of course, I heard it's 1,000,000 degrees down there. So maybe
essentially
a million.
Yeah, the high today in Columbia is 98.
98. I heard it felt like 110 or something. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for all of you that are going out there to support those guys. I mean, that's my man Ryan, my man Jeff, my man Strick. It's their thing. I've actually got a little in June when I was down, I got a little private tour of what they're going. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a great place for Gamecocks to gather and good people running it, you know. So please check them out. And thank you to all that are going. You know, it's one of those things that makes me happy. Makes me happy. Mm-hmm. But people support good people, even though I've got serious FOMO about not going there. So anyway, Craiger said, please keep Julian Walker healthy. Yeah. I mean, they've got some depth over there, but that he's good enough to where you're going to miss him. I mean, you know, you're going to miss that guy, even though he's a freshman, if he doesn't play. But that's what you have depth for. And now Julian Walker's not hurt. I've heard nothing. Nothing to indicate he's, you know, there's going to be some bumps and bruises and things like that that take place during camp. But, you know, what's scary is, Tennessee, they're down two defensive players that could have started that were at least in the 2D. One was a starter at linebacker. And then their only guy at safety, safety's a big question mark up there this year. Their only guy they had, Farouk, that was coming back, he got carted off the field and in a car today, and the ambulance took him. Leg injury. Doesn't sound good. You know, we saw what happened with the Carolina Panthers at the beginning of training camp with all those injuries. So you just kind of hope it doesn't rear its ugly head at South Carolina, because there's certain positions where I believe you can, you can maybe survive it a little bit. But a lot just depends on who the individual player is. Because there's some guys, no matter how much depth you have and no matter how many good players you have on the roster, they're just a cut above. Mm-hmm. And you're going to miss that little bit extra, right? Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with that. So you just got to hope everything's okay. I mean, you've already got two difference makers already questionable for the opener, Peak and Stewart. Those two are different situations. But you got a little concern there, so you don't want to. You just want to stay healthy this time. I mean, that's the key to any fall camp anywhere. Stay healthy, stay healthy. I mean, and it's crazy. You know, we were talking about Judge Collier, Judge Collier earlier, and you know, he stayed healthy all fall camp last year. It looked like a break. I mean, then Virginia Tech game, you know, planted the wrong way. So this is football. It's just football. But, you know, we're all really excited, or you know, even the people that are the naysayers, you know, people look at this roster and they're like, there's some ball players on it.
Just check all the helmets for Vipers. You saw that story out of high school football.
I would quit.
Thought about you when I read that. I was like, oh, man.
I'm Indiana Jones. I hate snakes.
Gosh, two hours in the helmet, and
how did you not know? Why didn't it bite you?
It's probably really scared. It was getting hit in the head a lot.
It's probably a bit of an experience for the snake too, right? Yeah, like, oh, what have I got myself into?
Two foot viper.
Talking about like CTE.
How did this happen?
That snake was in a bad place.
My second thought was like about one of those kids who just walks into their house and like pulls a snake out of their pocket. I was like, oh, look, this kid grew up.
Oh, so this thing burrowed. This thing burrowed into kind of the padding on the helmet. So yeah, it couldn't bite him. Well, that's good.
That's good. Yeah,
dude, I would just be like, oh my
God, could you imagine that thing coming out of your ear hole though, like mid play?
No. Oh. No, imagine like coming out like the front of the helmet and you're trying to tackle somebody, they're running away. Why are you running away? Come here.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that would be harrowing. I don't know if my heart would have been able to hold that even at that age. Probably would have just died.
Cottonmouths are serious too.
Yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, they were like viper. I'm like, well, there's a limited number of vipers that could be, and then they had a picture. I was like, oh great, cottonmouth. That's not fun at all.
I mean, you'll survive a cottonmouth bite. The way I understand it, you know, you go get your care. It's not going to kill you like a rattlesnake might, like quickly. But yeah,
it's the second most venomous snake in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't want
to. I'm sorry. In Arkansas. But no, I mean, I'm just like, good Lord, God. I guess Maumelle High School. Must be near some water. That's why I don't swim in rivers, man. All these people that are like going like, let's go down the river.
Well, you didn't know a snake can't bite you underwater, JC.
Nobody's ever told me that. I
think that's a myth. I think they can definitely bite you underwater.
They can swim underwater and they can swim on top of the water. And they, yeah.
I love the
all right, coach. I want to talk coach about
that. He had to talk with his team in the locker room. Like, all right, now make sure you're checking for snakes in your pads.
You got a new nickname now, Snake.
Snake.
This is Tommy Snake Smith.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, some of these, there's a wide variety. I've been to enough high school football games to know there's a wide variety of PA announcers at these games. Some of them are legendarily good. Some of them are local legends that do it for years. It's like, oh, well, you know, Ernie Mack, you know, he's there at Mount Vernon High School and, you know, he's then there in our PA every year. And the local paper does a nice article on him. He's sitting there smiling with the microphone. Then you have some guys that are just like teachers that are just morons, like at my stepson's school, cranking out the Bon Jovi at the game.
That's right.
That's 42 years old, that music, Living on a Prayer. Can't get anything right, mispronounces names, you know, that kind of thing. And then there's what I call ultra enthusiastic guy. This also is usually a teacher. It's usually somebody in the drama department that also likes football. And they're just like, it's a first down Patriots. That guy can go jump in a hole. and I'll tell you why. It's the same concept as why Kroger Field at Lexington is the worst place to watch a college football game I've ever been. Because it's not he it's there's so much attention on himself that he ruins the whole game and atmosphere. Instead of being nuanced to being a PA guy, or letting the band play, or then letting you hear the cheerleaders during a timeout, or you're making an announcement, you're honoring, you know, some club winner on the field with a professional announcement. You know, and all that, you know, you're sitting there just looking, that's, and congratulations to Deanna, the science winner. You're putting effects on your voice and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This
is a Wendy's.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
That's a Wendy's.
So. Anyway, TD did ride the old Swamp Fox at Family Kingdom. They did work on it. It's not as terrible as it was when I was a kid. Mm. Yeah, I rode it last in like 17, 18, 19, something like that. Never again.
Last time we were there, it was not working.
Yeah, I mean, it's 175. It's,
right.
When my family bought it, they bought it after Hugo, and they restored the whole thing. I mean, it's really more of a, but that's after Hugo. I mean, that's in the 90s.
So yeah.
Still, you know, it's all under new ownership, so it's one of those things. Yeah, Skip Bertman died today. I'm sure Jamie talked about it. Mm-hmm. Hell Rooster says the JT Kia's commercial is the loudest thing on earth. We probably should turn that down or ask for a new one because I've noticed it too.
It is
nothing against JT's Kia.
No.
It'll wake you up. Maybe by design.
Sounds like a used car commercial.
Or just changed. I mean, just we can't use it. I mean, you know, no offense to anybody. But JB's gone. Let's talk about carnies. Bobby's 60-40 going to high social.
Yeah, nice.
Bruin said, when we put 65 on Tennessee this year, they're going to blame their injuries on Beamer. Clayton White, like Pat DeMarco and Whit Merrifield guys actually have a new podcast, and they interviewed Clayton White. And I put this on the Insiders Forum. So he explained it, the wristband thing. And this is very, very interesting because what he said was, during the week, he had an idea because they're trying to simulate Tennessee's tempo on offense, right? It's hard to do in practice. And so he said, let's give the scout team offense wristbands so they can look and just call the play and go super fast. Give us a look. And Cam Smith pops up and goes, why can't we have wristbands? You know, just for defense. And it's like, well, okay, that sounds good. So they gave him these wristbands. And he said that he's glad they had them. He said he only had six defensive plays on the wristband. And he was like, come on. And then he said at some point in the game, Tennessee was going so fast that – he was calling two defensive plays at a time and telling the guys, just don't look at the sideline. Just do this next. Look at the wristband.
That's right. Do this, then do that.
It's either wristband one or wristband three. and so, yes, the wristbands helped. But if we remember in that game, Carolina did not have – it's not like they stopped them. You know, they lost a game to Georgia earlier that year. I don't even think they broke 20 points. That was a good Georgia defense. Carolina stopped them, though. I mean, Carolina did not stop them. I mean, they stopped them enough. The thing was, Tennessee couldn't stop Carolina's passing game on offense. Carolina scored all, you know, up and down the field. And then Hooker got hurt.
Yeah.
Carolina won that game, I believe, primarily because Hendon Hooker had, before he got hurt, had the rare off game with his downfield passing. If you remember, he misfired on a couple of guys deep that were open. That was their secret sauce all year. Hooker was one of the most accurate downfield passers in college football.
Yeah, he was lighting it up long
distance. I mean, just dropped it in there. And you know, in that Georgia game, he was off down in Athens. Because I remember Jalen Hyatt was wide open in the end zone, and he just overshot him in Athens. It wasn't even that they rubbed, they had a lot of pressure or anything. And then in Columbia, he was off, and then he got hurt. And then, you know, but that whole myth about that, it's just crazy how Tennessee fans. And look, I agree. It didn't make any sense week to week. It's one of the dangest things I've ever seen in years of Carolina football.
It blew all our minds, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoot.
Bruin Nation. I personally
guaranteed on my show the Gamecocks would lose by 28-plus that game because I really thought that was going to be the outcome.
We gave up before that one on the show. We were like, you know, we thought Carolina, you know, they lost that game to Missouri at home, which is annoying. Bounce back. They beat Vandy on the road in kind of a weird one. And then they go to Florida. And they go to Florida, right? And, you know, Florida ran the ball well. You're concerned about the run defense. But you're like, well, if they play offense like they played up at Vandy, they'll be fine. Uh-uh. Ran the ball right into a 420-pound offensive guard all day. Couldn't block. Kept running substitution pattern. I mean, it was just all. And then the defense, of course, could not stop. I think the doors blown off of them by an average Florida team. 38-6. And so we were like, yeah, Tennessee's going to kill them.
Yeah, right. It's over.
And I think we're all in the 50s. I think JB was like, JB was the most positive of all of us. He's like 55-21.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I was like 52-10. And Phil's like 56-13. We all picked that.
Yeah. It was ugly.
And you know, SEC Nation was there, and I was up watching. I was like, well, you know, they're Carolina or whatever, because the game was at 7, and Herbie and or Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit were calling it. I was like, that's cool. There wasn't a lot of good games that weekend. And so, and Shane Beamer was on. And I just kind of started thinking. I'd gotten a text earlier in the week. Like, we're fixing this. I wonder how they're going to fix it. He seemed eerily confident. Like, oh, yeah, you know, it's flush it like Shane does. He's flushed this week. He's ready to go again. And, man, that was unbelievable. That was an unbelievable game. I mean, a lot of my friends who never miss a game sold their tickets.
Like, I can't
watch this. So, Luke said, if you score every possession on offense, you win the game no matter what you do on defense. Yeah. I don't know. Did Carolina score every possession? They did have to punt a couple of times.
I think there were a punt or two, yeah, but not many.
Hell Rooster says, he says he's not trying to cause problems, but his ears bleed. No, I mean, we need to know.
You're right. It's.
I don't mind that kind of feedback, especially when it's not, you know. Hell says, I'm glad we play UT off the bye. Plenty of time to put loads of sand on the field. That's right. Here's the sand.
I'd have every player on the field wear two wristbands.
Call it sand lapper night.
Just to troll the hell out of them.
Well, the other part about the way, where that game falls on the schedule, you get them right after they play Alabama, and it's their 8th straight game, and they've already got injury issues.
Right, right. It's going to be tough.
I don't, man, looking at their defensive personnel and then knowing what most people around college football say, where Jim Knowles is a great coordinator, but his last, you know, it takes guys almost a year to get into it. Penn State last year was not really all that great on defense. And now you're losing personnel, and you
have to play complementary football to Heupel's offense. Like that, you can be the best defensive coordinator in the world, but if your defense is out there, you know, 14 possessions in a game, you're going to wear down eventually. There's going to be a shot.
Yeah,
that bites you. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. And then you're talking about starting a fresh truth. Either a red, your quarterback's not. And look, in that system, though, I mean, I don't put it past a true freshman quarterback lighting it up. And you look at their schedule. Now, I don't know what happens with all these personnel losses, you know, how that evolves.
Yeah.
But you look at their schedule, and their two road games before they get to Carolina are at Georgia Tech and at Arkansas. So you got an ACC team that lost its heart and soul and its offensive coordinator in Atlanta, where you're going to have probably of the 40 or the 52,000 at the game, you probably have 30,000 of them. You have a sea of orange at Grant Field. So that's one. And then your other is to the worst team in the league that you owe a little something to, because they upset you a couple of years ago. I don't say it, though.
And almost did it last year too.
And so then the home games are like, they play Furman and then I think Kennesaw State, but they also have, they have Texas at home. It will surprise me none to see Texas lose at Neyland Stadium.
Right.
And then they have Auburn, who's, you know, first-year head coach, rebuilding, Alex Golas going home and all that. Then they have Alabama, who, by the day, a lot of us are kind of digging into it and not just going, oh, it's Alabama. It doesn't look the same on paper. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's better. I don't know. So Tennessee could come in with a lot of momentum. Like I said, I don't, you know, you start losing guys like this and you're thin behind them and you can't stop anybody. And, you know, your young quarterback's good, not great. And he messes up and makes mistakes. You'll lose to Texas. You'll lose to Auburn and you'll lose to Alabama and you may lose to Arkansas. But I mean, I don't know. I'm looking forward to that game though. Cause Shane Beamer was on with Bill Gunner. And Bill was talking about how it's good to play Florida, Tennessee, and Georgia again. We all grew up with that, right? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean it. Yeah.
What do you think about playing the SEC East big boys again?
Yeah, it's long overdue. I don't know why those things weren't. I don't know why they didn't set it up with pods to start with, similar to this, and just go with it, even with 8 games, I think. Of course, I'm on the record as saying that Birmingham mishandled everything when expansion came. So especially scheduled
this time. Yeah. Well, they've had it for years, and it's been a little. Look, here's my thing about them: they do the best they can. It's tough because when you're scheduling, you're not just going. Well, you're not just worried about like balance. You got to worry about order, you know, or whatever. And they tend to kind of learn because, and then TV. And TV's getting in there like, well, you can't have this week where we've only got, you know, Mississippi State and Missouri and everybody else is playing, you know, out of conference, SoCon Saturday, right? Mm. But, you know, you look back on it, they caught some heat when Missouri and A&M came in the league because of, like, what they did to, like, Carolina and some other schools. Like, so in 2012, and it was 2012, 2013, they blew up the rotating schedule, and they just threw teams in there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so Carolina, Missouri came on. I think somebody else came off. In 12, Carolina ended up playing Georgia at home, at LSU, and at Florida, three straight weeks. Meanwhile, Georgia was like Ole Miss. What, I think it was a 12. Yeah, Ole Miss wasn't quite there yet. They had an Auburn team that lost every single conference game that year. There's no Alabama. There's no LSU. There's nothing. I'd have to look back and see who all Georgia played. But Carolina beat Georgia pretty bad, and then Georgia got it together and beat the Gators and the Swamp. And so, you know, they ended up winning it because the Gamecocks lost it, were dead tired and sick when they lost at the Swamp. And Georgia didn't have to play anybody, you know? I mean, all right, so here's what it was. So the Dogs opened up with Buffalo. They beat Missouri. They beat Florida Atlantic. They beat Vanderbilt. And then they had a shootout win against Tennessee. And I think it was Derek Dooley's last team in 12. Then at Carolina, they got creamed. Then they won by 5 at Kentucky, which Kentucky would have beaten them. Then they got it together, went down, beat Muschamp's team, and won 17-9. Florida was third in the country. It's a big win. Ole Miss comes to town. They're not quite ready. At Sanford Stadium, they beat them. For what? Auburn was on the road, but Auburn wasn't worth a crap. And then they beat Georgia Southern, Georgia Tech. So they ended up winning the division and didn't, and then avoided Alabama, LSU, A&M, and Johnny Football. Mississippi State was pretty good that year. They played Ole Miss and Auburn from the other division. And then won every other game besides Carolina. So that ended up not being fair. And so this time around, I think they tried to be a little more fair. Then there's all the complaints about we want to play everybody, but you also want to preserve the rivalries. It's a hard job when you're mandated to do it. What I think is they need to change the formula, go to pods, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't want to do it.
Well, look, the pod system, I mean, I don't think it's helped South Carolina at all not to have Georgia and Florida and Tennessee regularly on the schedule, because when you're recruiting against those programs, head to head matters. Like if you can't say, well, we beat Georgia 2 out of the last 3 years, you know, it hurts when you're going up against the same prospect. And we've seen that with Georgia and what they've done on the defensive line. I mean, yeah. South Carolina and Georgia went after the exact same players, and South Carolina lost every battle. I think if they had had one or two more wins against Georgia in that time frame, they probably would have won some more of those recruiting battles.
Maybe so, yeah. I mean, look, and I'll say this. You know, Georgia and Florida are back home. You know, they've given – so the three permanents are Kentucky, Georgia, and Florida, so half the East.
Yeah.
The only complaint I have about the – or the only not complaint, the only wish I have about the schedule this year, I would like to replace the trip to Norman, Oklahoma with the trip to Nashville this year. That would be my wish.
That's right.
This is the only one that makes sense, you know, or Alabama, you know, Alabama or Oklahoma. I, there's no need to play Alabama and Oklahoma three straight years if you're Carolina.
No. Yeah, I mean,
OU may not have been may not have been possible though, because maybe it just wasn't Carolina's time to play Texas. I don't know. So,
but I mean, if they hadn't gone to 9, the schedule was set up to where you were doing a home and home, you know, Austin and Columbia, because that was the way they sold it to us, you know, when
they were, everybody played seven new teams. It would just be Kentucky. So you'd have Florida, Tennessee, Georgia back,
but
you'd also have Auburn,
Texas,
Arkansas would be back home. Mississippi State would be back home. All right, I'm going to write this down during the break, and we'll have a little powwow about it.
Yeah, which schedule would you prefer?
Oh, yeah. Inside the Gamecocks, the show. We'll rock on after this.
Welcome back, everybody. Inside the Gamecocks, the show here. Going to play a little what if, looking at the current schedule versus what the schedule would have been had the SEC not been bent over and caved to the Big Ten to go to 9 conference games for basically a handshake and a bill of goods on the
change. A wink.
To the that's right.
A gift certificate to Foga to Chow.
Yeah, that's the whole trust me, bro, is enough to, I think, to void Greg Sankey's contract. But we'll save that discussion for another day.
Absolutely. Okay, so here's how it would have shaked out. Because what they were going to do is go, and now look, this is a hypothetical, because what they may have done is like reset it and gone, well, because it was going to be a 1-7 format. So the only team Carolina would have played every year was Kentucky.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is, like, every other game was like a rivalry type. I mean, every other team kind of had a team in the conference that they wanted to play. But like A&M and Texas wouldn't have been played every year. Mm-hmm. Auburn and Georgia have played like a bunch of years consecutively. They wouldn't have been played. So, but anyway, here's what Carolina would have had: Kentucky, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, Auburn, Arkansas, Mississippi State. 8. But they'd also had Miami on the schedule.
Right, yeah. Would have left Miami. Yep. Mm-hmm.
We'd have been pretty – I mean, that would have been kind of something else to have Miami coming in here for the opener, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you know what, though? I still would have enjoyed that.
I'd have been here for it.
Yeah, I mean, I was not upset when, you know, we're watching that, and I'm like, yeah, we'll take the runner up. Come on, bring it on.
Yeah. So which one would you guys rather have? So throw Miami in there. So you've got a schedule that includes Miami, Texas, Georgia, and then Kentucky, Florida, Tennessee, Auburn, Arkansas, Mississippi State. I like that better than having to go. And I don't know if home or away, how that would have played out. A lot depends on that. Miami, of course, would have been at home. Clemson would have been away. I don't know. You know, I think the names on this year's schedule and the fact you play 9 are probably a little bit more daunting. But you have to keep in mind what you essentially – everybody's like, 9 SEC games. All right, but you essentially traded Arkansas for Miami. Arkansas is on the road. If you want to use a home game, you traded Mississippi State for Miami, basically. That's not harder.
No. Yeah, right. That's a step down.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
I think that college football still needs more of these non-con games that move the needle. So, like, having Miami, I would have really appreciated. I still think that South Carolina – having to go all the way to Oklahoma with this season, it's like what the SEC did when A&M and Missouri came in. Oh, well, you're going to play those teams every year, and we're going to make you go every other year halfway across the country that nobody else has to do from, you know, where South Carolina sits in the SEC. I think any way you slice it, the schedule is still a bear, right? I mean, you have Miami. Okay, they're better than Mississippi State. They're better than Arkansas. I think the season would have played out largely the same, but I'm just happy that they have the old SEC East teams, like a lot of them on the schedule, but because that's what it needs to be going forward for South Carolina. But yeah, give me Vanderbilt all day, every day. I'd much rather have Vanderbilt on the schedule than Oklahoma.
Yeah, that would have been the only, I think it's Alabama you could have replaced, because, like, okay, so the reason, one of the reasons Carolina is playing Oklahoma third straight year is because you get every school in the league gets either Oklahoma or Texas every year. Mm-hmm. That's how they did it. So Vanderbilt would have to take the place because it would be a road game. So it would have to take the place of Alabama. There's no logical world where Carolina is supposed to be going to Tuscaloosa for the second time in 3 years. Carolina's never even played Alabama 3 years in a row.
Right, right.
I mean, it just and hasn't.
And on like for over a decade's drought at times.
They went to Tuscaloosa like once since 2009, and that was 2 years ago. So there's really no logic to that. That was a dartboard thing. But
give me Vanderbilt instead of Alabama for sure there too. I'll keep Oklahoma on the schedule.
Yeah,
that's fine. They just have a mess on their hands. I don't know what they're going to try and do to fix it.
I think it's the least of their concerns too.
TV dominates it. TV is going to decide the matchups way more than Birmingham is in any given season.
And they're doing the best they can. I mean, and with the transfer, so it used to be. So when Carolina came into the league, their permanent opponents were – it used to be a 5-1-2 format. So you played your 5-2-1. You played your 5 division opponents, right? 12-team league. And then you had one permanent – you had 2 permanent opponents from the other division.
One that floated.
And then a floater. And you'd play them back to back. So when Carolina first came in the league, Alabama was the floater. They played them in 92 down there. I think Dabo was on that team. And they played them in 93 in Columbia. And then they'd rotate off. And then the next year was LSU, 94, 95. You just kind of work your way through. And Carolina played Mississippi State and Arkansas. Fair, right?
Yeah.
Because if you didn't have a rivalry game, and there were a lot of those people wanted rivalry games, that would be how it would work out. You know, other schools, I think Florida had Auburn and LSU every year. Mm-hmm. You know, that was because Florida actually has an old rivalry with Auburn. That was because before the expansion in the SEC, it was a little weird how they did the schedule. Like sometimes like during the 70s, they would count non-conference games and you'd play like 5 or 6 SEC games. You have schools that never played each other. It was a weird, weird deal. I mean, we think it's weird now. It's just very strange. So that happened for a while. Well, then they were like, well, there's no need to have 2 permanent opponents. We want to play other teams more often. So we'll have 2 rotating opponents. And, you know, so in 2002, that was the last time Mississippi State was a permanent. And Arkansas remained because the 2 newcomers in the league. So they played Arkansas for another 10 years every single season. And then they were like, well, let's just have no permanent opponents. They switched them. And everybody got mad at Ray Tanner for getting A&M as the permanent opponent.
Made no sense. Like South Carolina going to – College Station other year.
But here's what was going to happen. If you remember what year, people need to remember what year it was. It was 2011. I think it actually was Eric Hyman that signed off on this. It was Eric Hyman because Hyman left in the summer of 2012. And if you remember Texas A&M, when they came into the league, they just fired Mike Sherman. Terrible hire. Mm-hmm. NFL guy, right? 6-6, Big 12 team, couldn't stop anybody. You know, that's the program that Oklahoma beat 77-0 one day. I mean, Missouri was actually a little bit better than they were coming in. Nobody was fearful that Missouri's coming into the East, right? And so LSU in Florida for years. If you think about some of the controversies they've had in that series, LSU versus Florida, and they play every season, you know, and not just the throwing of the shoe, you know, there was that hurricane game that they refused to make up in 2016. And they finally did at the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, they want it out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, those years when Urban Meyer was at Florida and Les Miles was at LSU, I mean, it's like, it's tough. I mean, why do we got to play these guys every year? They're not even our division. LSU's like an Alabama's in our division too. I mean, we got to play these guys every year. And so they wanted out. So what LSU and was pushing for, Florida was going to get A&M. And LSU's like, give us that bucket of chicken in Columbia that we beat every time we play them.
Right.
Which at the time Spurrier was here, Carolina was rolling. There's competitive games. But still, you didn't want to have to put LSU on the schedule every year, plus Florida, Georgia, Tennessee. Okay? Mm-hmm. This wasn't. And Carolina was like, no. We're not doing that. We're not. LSU's kind of like, we'll get rid of Florida and have South Carolina.
I'm looking at it right now. I mean, just tell me the ones that don't make sense. You have Alabama, Tennessee, Arkansas, Missouri, check, check. Auburn, Georgia, check, check. Florida, LSU, check. Kentucky, Mississippi State, check. Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Alabama, and then South Carolina, A&M. Like, yeah. It's not even like a state over.
This team's got to go somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, and it was just like, well, A&M needed somebody to play from the East every year. But
just the fact that it was either LSU or A&M, like still multiple states over. We couldn't have done this better.
I think that also was a part of, you know, Carolina's success. Because, I mean, it would have been fine to – they would have gladly – Arkansas would have gladly kept playing. You know, Arkansas would, you know, but – And it just so happened during that time period, Arkansas kind of went into the wilderness. It'd have been great to have played Arkansas. Yeah. It used to be a bad thing. Now it's like, yeah, let's play Arkansas. But it's kind of crazy because, like, they tried to force this this rivalry between Arkansas and Missouri. Arkansas and Missouri, even though they're bordering states, had played five times ever in football before they got in the SEC, ever. Right. And they're like, it's the red line rivalry, baby, or the Battle of the Ozarks. And so they tried to say, we're going to force this Arkansas-Missouri thing, so they're out. Arkansas's out. Mississippi State's like, no, we're not taking South Carolina and getting rid of Kentucky. Kentucky's always been our permanent opponent. We love each other.
That's right. We love each other.
Ole Miss, which, it's been tough playing Ole Miss lately, but back then, no. Ole Miss.
Vanderbilt was probably happy.
Well, Vandy, when Ole Miss is down, and they have been down more than they've been up, Vandy kind of beats them sometimes, you know. But there's a reason. Ole Miss, the more I learn, I used to like them just fine. The more I learn about them, I'm like, that is a rogue, shady operation out there in Oxford. So they went back in the history books and dug up some. I mean, William Faulkner may have written this article, right? This old, like, documentation of the historic rivalry between Vanderbilt and Ole Miss is like, I declare that's why the Rebels must play Vanderbilt every year.
The Rebels and the like Commodores.
Shelby Foote could have narrated this thing. I just declare Vanderbilt had a very fine fullback. He was from Greenville, Mississippi. His name was Beauregard. Beauregard ran straight through the Vanderbilt Commodores defenses that day. And, I mean, you know, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
But it has nothing to do with any of that crap.
No, it's a drive chart written on.
It's like
charcoal, right?
Vandy sucks. And that's a win.
We want that.
Vandy was the most popular girl at the party for every SEC opponent that when they were talking about, like, no, we love Vanderbilt. It's very important. It's very important to our historical rivalry. You're messing up history, okay, guys?
I mean, in Tennessee, like okay, so normally, like, Tennessee's, like, you know, so Tennessee gets Alabama as a permanent. There are three permanent opponents now are Alabama, but they also – Kentucky, where you play for the Bourbon Barrel, and Vandy. Because Tennessee, when they were kind of struggling, you felt sorry for them. Because even when they were pretty good, that would just happen to be the year LSU was really good, and they rotated on the schedule. And then they always had to play Alabama during the Nick Saban era, every year.
Yep.
Now, never mind, Philip Fulmer once beat Alabama like nine straight seasons and owned the rivalry. But Alabama, they couldn't beat them. And so you felt bad because this is an extra L. Doesn't matter, home, away, neutral, you're not going to beat them. And it had to hurt their pride. But I felt sorry for them then. So I wasn't so like, oh, that's a bunch of crap that you get to play Kentucky and Vandy every year just because they're close. But they do. They're fortunate, you know. And it is that's not a manufactured rivalry like Arkansas, Missouri, or Ole Miss and Vanderbilt.
Tennessee wasn't, even Tennessee fans, they weren't terrified of Alabama in the way a lot of people would be because of that success they had in the past. They wanted to preserve that rivalry because we're going to beat Alabama next year.
Yeah. And they would always talk about it's kind of unfair that we got to play Bama and y'all get to play this team or another. But that's kind of how A&M came around. But I'm actually I don't mind playing A&M. You know, it's not a big deal. It's a far trip, obviously. But I'm kind of thankful they're off the schedule next year just because it's kind of overplaying them. Right. I would rather actually play Missouri than A&M. I know that sounds sacrilegious because Carolina's had a lot more success under Beamer against A&M than Missouri. But I just if you're going to give me one, give me another. Because A&M will always be dangerous because they're in Texas. They have money. Right. They always recruit well. So even, you know, Texas A&M could be 7-5 this year. Brad Crawford's spring prediction in 25 could be a year early. I mean, don't put it past them. I mean, their history is not super.
If I had to pick somebody outside of the traditional SEC East, I think I would pick Arkansas, probably from familiarity. But I have a buddy that played football at Arkansas, and I was talking to him a couple of days ago, and we were looking at the schedule, and he was like, you know, Matt, what do you think about Arkansas? What do you think about South Carolina? And he was like, in my opinion, Arkansas and South Carolina are like twins separated at birth. Like they have the same level of preseason expectation, but they all know eventually it's going to be 5-7 and have those sporadic years of 8-9 wins. He's like, they are twins separated at birth. They should play every year.
I didn't mind them as
I don't know.
Own it. I was kind of happy to see it go away. I think just because we had been traumatized by the amount of rushing yards they'd given.
Yeah, it was 14. Razorbacks. They played 24 times. Arkansas is 14-10. I don't know that they're the same, though, Matt. Arkansas's got way better tradition and history than Carolina. But they're almost like they've almost become a Nebraska. Like Nebraska's advantages when they joined the Big Ten went away quickly. Like, you know, they went away quickly. Arkansas has been kind of a slow roll, you know, as the Texas schools, as Texas has become more of an SEC state, they've lost their kind of ability to go sell in that state and get recruits. Arkansas is also really good at other sports, like men's basketball, baseball, track. So it's weird. I think Carolina is probably the most similar, just as far as a team, like in my opinion, who they should play. And you're not wrong, and your friend's not wrong.
No, it's not even my opinion. I'd love to
play Arkansas. Yeah, and it's funny you said it this year because the expectations should be miles apart.
Yeah.
Arkansas, I mean, God bless them. You know, God bless.
We went through the schedule and he was just saying, look, man, we're going to go 2-10. And he said, you know, this just reminds me of the year that he said that they played SMU coming off like their death penalty. And it was the only game that SMU won was against Arkansas. He's like, that's just what happens to us.
Yeah, dude. It's Arkansas football has been tough through the years. But, the state. The state of Arkansas is it's way smaller than South Carolina now. It used to be kind of the same size, centrally located capital, that kind of thing. The only difference is like the University of Arkansas, it would be like if there was no Carolina in the middle and it was just Clemson up in the north, because that's Fayetteville's in the northwest corner of the state, just like Clemson is near the mountains. Mm-hmm. So is Walmart. Clemson near Walmart, you know, that. Walmart and Seneca, baby.
That's right.
But look, I think Ole Miss would be the team I would want to play every year.
I thought you were going to say Kentucky.
Kentucky's in the SEC.
Yeah, so we're taking the West teams, right? Yeah.
As far as who's similar to South Carolina through the years, Missouri. Probably like a Missouri. Missouri doesn't have much history, but they've been kind of dangerous during this era at times that, you know, they can get players. You kind of find out they can get players. There's some similarities to A&M too, like as far as tough luck and things like that, and expectations and support. But A&M is just such a different animal because they're just a giant, you know. It's like you're They got seven times the fans Carolina's got. They got more money than God, you know. I'd say
I like the Ole Miss call.
I don't know that Ole Miss is similar to Carolina. I think their fans are, it's a little different, but but that's a team I'd want to play every year. I think South Carolina and Mississippi should play. If it's geography from the old West, I'd probably play Auburn every year.
Yeah, right.
I think we all got PTSD from that series, even though Carolina's won two in a row.
Well, I blame Tennessee for Missouri being slotted in the East, because if it weren't for the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry, it would have just made natural sense for Auburn to move to the East.
Yes.
Yeah, had Alabama as a permanent opponent, but then they're like, but what about third Saturday in October?
Yes, there you go.
We can't not have third Saturday in October.
If you look at the line they drew, though, and you look at Columbia, Missouri is actually closer to to half the old East than they were to five of the six in the West, miles-wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually closer to Lexington, Knoxville, and Nashville than it is to, like, Baton Rouge and some places, Auburn and Alabama, places like that. That's weird. Missouri is an outpost, ladies and gentlemen.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It's out there.
It is, bro. It is. I'm glad they're not. Now, I would rather play them yearly, so you get used to it. I'm glad they're not on the schedule this year. And that's just because I think Carolina's going to be pretty good. But we talked about Clayton White earlier.
It's the one coach, man.
There are coaches that, I mean, Bobby Petrino, speaking of Arkansas, had Ellis Johnson's number.
Yep.
It just happens. Eli Drinkwitz and that bunch, they have Carolina's number defensively. Luke said we're trying to pick the easiest games. I like the matchups.
No, we were just trying to sub out a game, and then we went down a rabbit hole of talking about other things.
Yeah, Friday. It's Friday. Oh, by the way, happy anniversary to Robert Smith from The Cure. Speaking of Friday, I'm not sad anymore. I'm
not sad anymore.
Man, now that Joker's wedding picture was up on that. I mean, he looked happier than I've ever seen him. I mean, if a woman turns you down six times for marriage and you write not only a collection of songs, but a collection of hit songs,
build a career
after her, build a career, world famous because of it, and she finally says yes, your music's going downhill for a bit. This is why we didn't hear from The Cure again until they lost. You know, you don't make money off record sales anymore, so they got to go tour. And he's looking like a PE teacher dressed up like Edward Scissorhands for Halloween out there singing. He still sings beautifully, but man, you go through all that real trauma, and you finally land it. That's what the Gamecocks winning a national championship in football is going to feel like.
For real.
When Robert Smith from The Cure finally got the girl. That popped in my head because it's Friday. Oh, I'm in love. Where did that come from? She was still dissing him at that time.
I know.
Maybe he's just going to go. Maybe he realized he's off work and going to get a drink his sorrows away. So he's a little down
to the pub.
Maybe he found some joy.
Always find some joy.
Absolutely. Matt will be back Sunday night with a late night Gamecock show with Rob Williams. And look for his basketball insider update. A lot of insider notes for the men's basketball program up on thebigspur.com. Now, you're looking to go to a high school football jamboree tonight. FourQuarterFriday.com's got you updated with a lot of them. Not all of them. A lot of them from around the state. They've changed some times. They've canceled some of them.
Yeah.
Don't want you to drive here, there, and yonder, this heat, and show up. And there's nobody at the stadium. It'd be sad if you showed up like middle of, you know, out in the country, and the stadium has really good hot dog seats. Like, honey, we're just gonna skip dinner because we're just gonna have us a hot dog in this game, boy. This is gonna be good. You show up and it's canceled. What the hell? It ain't even that hot.
I can't even get out of
that. Last time you're taking me out for a fancy Friday night dinner.
I can't believe he did that. We were supposed to go to the fish camp.
Now we'll never be able to get in.
Luke wants to play Bama every year. I'd take that now. Not when that cyborg was coaching down there.
That's right.
No. No, dude, sir.
Crazy enough, Bama has not covered the spread against South Carolina since the year 2000, home or away.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Carolina usually plays them pretty good.
Yeah.
you know, especially the last 2 years.
9-point loss in the past 2 years. You're like, oh, yeah.
Even the game, like that game got out of hand in Columbia. I mean, you look, it was 47-16 in the fourth quarter. But, heck, had they not called that, I mean, it was a penalty, right? But it didn't have to be. You could have ignored it.
That's right.
That fake punt hits. I mean, they'd have been in a daggum thing. And then, the worst call in that game was Dowdle was not down before he got in the end zone.
Yeah.
And so you're down 24-10. That would have made it a one-score game. Carolina played pretty well that day. My Bama guy, because Bama was really good, he texted me. He's like, this should be an 8-win team. Well, they should have been.
Yeah, that's every year. Georgia, South Carolina, Bama friend.
That's right.
You know,
yeah. Welcome to Columbia.
No doubt. Doc Graybeard, good to have you back in the chat box. Holler. He says, I got nothing on Lori Bronsfield. Yeah, I'm sorry. Craig called Ryan Silverfield Lori Bronsfield.
Lori Bronsfield.
I don't know, man. He seems like a great guy. But man, you're like the third straight person from Memphis that has parlayed that to another job. The others are Mike Norvell and Justin Fuente.
Oh.
So that's all. I'm going to leave it with that.
Bronsfield, love it.
He's from the Norvell tree. All right, guys. We're going to get out of here. This has been the show. See you.
See ya.